Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. This is Avery After Dark, and as always, I'm your host, Avery Ross. Happy Memorial Day to you. It is officially summer, and you know what that means. It's time for some summer ghost stories. Make sure you're following along wherever you tune in to Avery After Dark. And if you want bonus episodes of the show, join the Avery After Dark Patreon or memberships on YouTube. Thank you so much to everyone who has joined. I just dropped a new bonus episode, and I think you all will really enjoy it. I will have you covered all summer long with the creepiest mysteries you can imagine. Now, let's get into our first story. A secret love affair turned deadly, and now some say a restless spirit still lingers at one of America's most popular summer vacation spots. This is the haunting of Covewood Lodge. The Adirondack Mountains in northeastern New York have been a favorite vacation spot for many for years. And the old Covewood Lodge is one of the most legendary spots that sits on the shores of Big Moose Lake. Covewood is nestled among balsam firs, spruce, and cedar trees, and the area is known for its beauty, and also its resident ghost. The spirit of Grace Brown, a beautiful woman whose brutal murder in the area decades ago shocked the nation. To understand this haunting, we have to go way back. Grace Brown was a 19-year-old woman who worked at a skirt factory in Cortland, New York. There, in 1905, Grace met a man by the name of Chester Gillette, the charming nephew of the factory owner. And at the time, Chester was thought to be quite the catch. He was very popular. And he set his sights on Grace, who quickly fell in love with him. For her, it meant so much. She was young, but she felt like she was in love. But for Chester, this was a very secret affair. He never took Grace out in public. He never even acknowledged the two were dating. They would only meet in private. In the meantime, Chester had a reputation of dating lots of other women, often from wealthier families, socialites in town. But Grace continued to see him, hoping things would eventually change. And eventually, Grace became pregnant. And at that time in history, unwed mothers were frowned upon. If you were pregnant as a single woman, it was considered publicly shameful. Many women were made to feel completely alone. And Grace begged Chester to marry her, thinking this would be the best way to handle the situation. If the two got married, they could avoid any public ridicule. And plus, Grace loved him, so this was the solution in her eyes. But Chester had different plans. One day in July 1906, Chester took Grace to the Adirondacks, out on a boat on Big Moose Lake. Grace assumed this would be their engagement trip, as apparently he had gone along with it and spoke of the two indeed getting married. That afternoon, Chester and Grace arrived at the docks. Grace excitedly climbed on board, and a man by the name of Robert Morrison rented out a rowboat to Grace and Chester, thinking they were just a sweet couple out for a romantic date. Robert hung around the docks and assumed the two would be back by dinner time, but they never came back. Robert was growing concerned, fearing the couple maybe got lost, were stranded out there, or had some kind of terrible accident. So the next morning, he organized a search party, and a group of men went out searching Big Moose Lake for the couple. And only a short time into their journey, the men made a gruesome discovery. They found the couple's rowboat was capsized, and not far from it, Grace's body floating deep in the lake. Seeing that Grace had drowned, they believed they would find Chester in the water as well. But he wasn't. They searched and searched, and it turns out they were looking in the wrong place. Chester was alive and quite well. 2 days later, he was found at a nearby hotel. And at first, when questioned, Chester denied even knowing who Grace was. Robert told police that Chester had in fact taken Grace out that day, and they confronted him with this. So then, Chester changed his story and said, well, yes, he did know Grace, and yes, they did go out on the boat that day. But actually, Grace jumped into the lake on her own accord because he had told her that he didn't love her anymore, and she was just so distraught. No one believed this for a second, and their suspicions were backed up by Grace herself. From Chester's rented room, Authorities confiscated Grace's love letters to him as evidence. Chester was tried with Grace's murder, and the case quickly grew attention nationwide. And those love letters were read out loud in the court during the trial in the fall of 1906. And in these letters, Grace begged for Chester to accept responsibility for the pregnancy. In her final letter, written July 5th, Grace hauntingly spoke of their future plans, specifically looking forward to her impending trip with Chester to Big Moose Lake, not knowing of his plans to murder her on the trip. Grace's autopsy revealed she had suffered major head trauma, and investigators believe that during that boat ride, Chester took Grace out far enough there would be no witnesses. Then, they believed he hit Grace over the head with either an oar or a tennis racket that she had packed in her bag, after which she is believed to have fallen out of the boat and drowned. Ultimately, Chester Gillette was convicted of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to death and died in the electric chair on March 30th, 1908. As I mentioned, this case became big news across America, and Hollywood later transformed the story into a hit film called A Place in the Sun. Shelley Winters played Grace's character, a poor woman who worked in a factory, who was seduced and then murdered by her lover. Strangely though, in the movie, the character based on Grace is portrayed as this broken-down woman, sort of annoying, nagging for marriage. Which by all accounts isn't accurate at all. Grace was said to be a very pleasant and beautiful woman. So that was sad, but hey, it's Hollywood. What can you expect? Eye roll. In the end, although justice was served in this case, for some reason, around the lodge, countless people say they have seen the restless spirit of a young woman wandering near Big Moose Lake. And many believe it's the ghost of Grace. On Unsolved Mysteries, they interviewed some witnesses to the paranormal activity. One summer night in 1988, it was dark out and several Covewood employees were walking towards the lodge, one of them being Rhonda Bousselot. She said she needed to stop inside one of the lodges, so she made her way inside, as three of her co-workers waited out front. And as soon as Rhonda entered the lodge alone, she said she was suddenly overcome with a sense that someone was inside with her. Although she knew the place was empty. It was late, no one else was around. As Rhonda was inside, trying to figure out why she felt this way, outside, her three co-workers stood stunned and speechless as they watched an apparition of a young woman appear on the balcony of the lodge. The spirit hovered for a few seconds and then disappeared, clearly wanting to be seen. Rhonda came back out and they told her about what they had seen. And Rhonda was too stunned, as she had told them that inside the lodge, she had felt a presence. A ghostly presence. After that, they were all convinced that they had seen the ghost of Grace. A few months after that, another woman named Linda Lee and her friend Bridget chose to take a trip to Big Moose Lake for a fun weekend getaway. But they said from the start, the women felt on edge there. They went there to kick back and relax, but something just felt off. One night, they took a stroll around Big Moose Lake, as many visitors do, and as they walked around the water's edge, they looked up, and over the lake, they saw that same apparition of a ghostly woman hovering over the water. The women stood in shock as they watched the figure, again apparently wanting to be seen and noticed, linger for a few moments and then disappear, just as it had done with the lodge employees before. Amazingly enough, sightings of Grace's spirit have continued throughout the years. Many people believe that ghosts can use water as a conduit to interact with the living world. From lakes and oceans to rivers and streams, there have been countless cases of ghosts communicating with people near water. Theories suggest that by using the energy found within water, ghosts are able to create an environment where they can interact with the living world. With people, they can manifest. This is often why paranormal TV shows and movies depict water as being the source of ghostly activity. And even more interesting, many cultures have long believed that drowning victims become ghostly guardians who protect surrounding waters from evil forces. But what do you think? Is this the ghost of Grace? A woman who was taken from this world too soon and is still attached to the lake because of unfinished business? Or, like many believe, has she remained tied to the lake to protect surrounding waters from evil wrongdoers like Chester Gillette? I find this haunting especially interesting because in Grace's case, her murderer was caught. He was tried and sentenced to death. So in theory, she did receive justice. In many cases like this, if a spirit is lingering around, it's thought that they need closure. They have unfinished business. But in Grace's case, she technically got it, but she still haunts the waters. Maybe Grace does act as a ghostly guardian. But I gotta know, what are your thoughts on this case? Leave them in the comments. I always love hearing your take. Summer 1995, three cowboys moved into a ranch deep in Texas. But what they found there was something they could never explain. This is the haunting of the Three Partners Ranch. Cowboys have that can't quit, won't quit attitude. They get the job done no matter how difficult the task may be. They're usually quite brave. Nothing really shakes them. Well, almost nothing. In June 1995, three cowboys named Johnny, Bobby, and Mike partnered up together on a new business venture. They took over a 3,000-acre ranch in central Texas. Their business plan was to sublease the land out for hunting. And on the land was a one-story smaller ranch-style house, four bedrooms, a small kitchen, quaint living area. The building was constructed in the 1950s. And after purchasing it, the three cowboys moved into the house temporarily as they got things situated. But on the very first night, the cowboys instantly began to realize they weren't alone in that house. That first evening, just as the men were dozing off to sleep, from the hallway, they all heard loud footsteps. And I mean loud. These footsteps started out quiet, as if they were in the distance, and grew closer and heavier with every step. And from there, every night was restless for the cowboys. The men said the ghostly footsteps were so loud, they were surprised the floorboards weren't broken. That's how unearthly this activity was. As soon as the men turned off their lights for the night, and just as they were starting to doze off, the paranormal activity began. Along with the heavy footsteps, they also began hearing these massive, huge blows onto the walls and ceilings. They described it as if someone was taking a sledgehammer to the place, over and over. Sometimes the men would all hear the activity, and other times the entity would pick on the cowboys one by one. And every night, it would continue until sunup. Nighttime was the most active, as they didn't report anything out of the ordinary during the day. And these kinds of occurrences fall into the realm of poltergeist activity. A poltergeist is a noisy and mischievous type of ghost that will cause physical disturbances such as loud noises. One especially active night, Bobby awoke to the sound of a huge crash coming from the kitchen. He said it was so loud, it sounded like someone had kicked or thrown all the chairs across the kitchen. Bobby jumped to his feet, grabbed his pistol by his bedside, and went to investigate. He was sure that the room had been flipped upside down. But when he walked into the kitchen and flicked on the light, he was stunned. Every chair was right in place. Nothing had been moved. The cowboys all spoke to each other about the activity, not knowing what other explanation other than it being paranormal. They didn't know much about the previous owners, but clearly someone was still lingering around the ranch house. And Johnny said he felt the entity didn't want to let the men rest. He said the loud bangs on the walls, heavy footsteps, only began right as the men were falling asleep. Right as they were about to doze off, there would be a huge bang on the wall. One evening, Johnny was alone at the ranch house. The other two men were gone for the night. And the entity used this opportunity to up the ante. As Johnny laid in bed, he said he heard a disembodied voice call out to him in a low whisper. Johnny said he heard it, clear as day. And when he sat up, he noticed his room was ice cold. And this is really scary. Another occasion, Mike woke up around 3 or 4 a.m. to a pain in his leg he had never felt before. His knee was throbbing in agony. He felt as if someone was sitting on it. In immense pressure, he frantically tried to roll off the bed, but said he couldn't move that leg. It was like someone or something had him pinned to the bed. He began waving his arm over his knee, trying to get whatever was on top of him off. And as soon as he did, he was able to get up, walk around the room, and said his leg felt fine. Another night, Bobby woke up around 2 or 3 a.m. to the feeling of someone sitting on the bed with him. The mattress physically pushed down, as if someone was sitting right on the bed next to him. Bobby sat up, admitting he was really scared, as the entity had not done that before. Clearly, things were intensifying within the home. It started off with sounds, but now this entity was getting a little more personal, taking it to a physical level. At this point, the men had all told their families about the haunted ranch house, and out of curiosity, one evening, Mike's sisters, Susie and Kelly, wanted to come spend the night. They had all heard about it and wanted to see what the men were talking about. They said they were assuming it would be a little bump in the night here and there, and they could disprove their brother by finding a rational explanation for it. But that night, they got into bed, turned off the lights, and the ladies got much more than they bargained for. As soon as the women closed their eyes, they said the activity started, with hearing a faint whistling sound in the distance. It got closer and closer until it sounded like the entity was right there in the room with them. Then the women said the loud crashes on the walls and ceilings began. They said it felt like the ceilings were about to cave in. By the time the sun came up, the sisters were packed and ready to leave the ranch house. A parapsychologist named William Roll investigated the home, although I don't believe he spent the night there. But he did notice the home was built on limestone bedrock, and he theorized the activity could be due to the Peltier effect. This could be the cause of the strange loud sounds. This effect occurs when water seeps between underground slabs of limestone and causes them to shift, expand, and contract. He also said the higher electromagnetic field can affect the human mind. And this is true, that it can affect some people physically, but typically these symptoms include fatigue, headache, dizziness, loss of concentration, and nausea. But it doesn't explain what the cowboys experienced inside the home, or the intensity of the activity. Sounds from a settling house, I think we can all recognize those kinds of noises. But from what the cowboys described to me, it sounds like much more than that. Another big question I have is, how does that explain the activity only taking place at night, only after the cowboys were settled in their beds, ready to go to sleep? How does that account for hearing the disembodied voices, the footsteps, the crashing sounds, the whistling, waking up to the feeling of the entity sitting on their knees? I could go on and on. I'm just not sure how that would explain everything. Some noises, sure, but not everything. Others argue that the natural environment of the house, sitting on limestone, may give rise to the paranormal disturbances. The address of this ranch was never disclosed, but they thoroughly believe that what they experienced in the ranch house was paranormal. This haunting is so interesting because this entity had these three rugged cowboys petrified. I think ghostly activity turns everyone back into a kid again. It doesn't matter how tough you are, when you hear or see something spooky, you want to run and hide under the covers. But I gotta know, what are your thoughts on this haunting? Do you believe it was paranormal or just some rock settling? Next up, in the summer of 1972, a newly married couple moved into a new home, but something inside the house was already waiting for them. This is the Smith family haunting. This story begins in 1972, when a newly married couple who did not want their names used publicly, we'll refer to them as Joe and Mary Smith, moved into a new home in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. Because of what took place in the home, they wanted to remain anonymous. Joe and Mary were really in that beginning phase of life. They had just gotten married and were in the process of starting their family. The couple toured the home in question and felt that this house was the one for them, and they moved in. In the first months in the house seemed to go by without incident. They were happily settling in. But a few months later, as Mary was pregnant with their first child, she was in the house alone one day when suddenly, she heard a loud banging commotion coming from the attic. Knowing she was by herself and scared, she called her father, who was a police officer, and he came running over. He got inside and immediately ran to the attic, expecting to find a burglar, but found no one. The attic was empty, but the place was a complete mess, like it had been ransacked. As the months passed, the activity continued. The couple would see doorknobs turning by themselves, and would hear strange noises coming from all over the house. Mary knew something was off in the home and began to look into the history of the home itself. It was an older house. She looked through historical records and learned that a boy had disappeared in the house decades earlier. Mary learned that the previous owners of the home had adopted a young boy in the 1940s. One day, the child mysteriously vanished and has never been found. This was an unsettling find, and she vowed she would continue looking for answers. She wanted to make this work, she wanted to stay in the house. One day, when her child was about the same age as the missing boy, he began these strange, alarming screaming fits for no apparent reason. A few weeks later, he visited his grandmother and had one of these fits again. When the grandmother asked the boy what was wrong, he pointed to a picture of the devil. He later told his mother that he had seen the same figure in his bedroom late at night. But Mary soon realized that the ghosts in her house were not all malevolent. Mary became pregnant again, and after her second child was born, he suffered a severe case of jaundice. This required surgery and numerous hospital visits. Mary said that one day, while she was praying for her child, she watched as a bright light came from her baby's room. According to her, when she walked into the bedroom to her baby, she was shocked and found that all traces of the jaundice was gone. Whatever light came into that baby's bedroom healed it. So it appeared there were dark forces in the home, but also forces of light. Time progressed and the activity continued on. Mary became pregnant again, and when her third son was 5 years old, he told his mom that he had seen the ghost of a man walking down their staircase. And not long after this, her son soon began having severe stomach pains. Doctors did test after test, but could not find a cause for the stomach problems. In 1993, Mary, in her continued effort into researching her home, went back to the historical records and kept digging, wanting to find out more about the history of the home. What took place here? And finally, she found some really old records and actually discovered that the missing boy that she thought had just disappeared had actually died under mysterious and suspicious circumstances and was buried somewhere on the property. But it remains unknown what truly happened to the boy. That night, after finding this new information, Mary tried to go to bed and began to experience something she had never felt before in her entire life. She said that she suddenly began to feel random and strong electrical shocks throughout her body, and she said she felt like she was going to die. She was not injured, but the entire experience really scared her. Both Mary and her children were having physical reactions and illnesses thought to be either caused or connected to the home and paranormal activity. That's when you know things are getting bad. And during this event, downstairs, Mary's son found that the dryer had been going on and off without explanation. Dr. Andrew Nichols, a parapsychologist, investigated the ghosts at the Smith House. His team, which included Dr. William Roll, who worked on the Tatum case, conducted a series of tests which included energy field tests to see if there was any unusual energy fields inside the home. Dr. Nichols found that a dresser left behind by the previous owners had a large electromagnetic field. And he also found strong energy fields from a well in the basement that goes down into an underground lake. And he believes that the energy fields from the well might be responsible for the strange activity in the house. The Smith family eventually moved out of the home, but the reason behind their series of ailments and illnesses has never been identified. What happened inside the Smith home remains a mystery, and the actual address has never been released. Makes you wonder if the new residents have experienced anything inside. The Smith haunting is another really alarming case where the residents of the home are becoming physically affected by the activity itself. But I do love that Mary experienced light there, and that her baby was healed, which is miraculous. This next place may just be one of the most haunted locations in the world. This is the haunting of the Banff Springs Hotel. Terrifying stories of a sealed-up forbidden room, a ghost bride, and a nice, cheerful, and helpful spirit named Sam the Bellman, whom many call the Good Ghost. Since its grand debut over a century ago, guests and staff alike say that the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel is filled to the brim with unique spirits. The haunted tales that come out of this hotel will send a chill up your spine. The Fairmont Banff Springs, formerly and commonly known as the Banff Springs Hotel, is a historic hotel in Banff, Alberta, Canada. The hotel itself sits at an altitude of over 4,000 feet and overlooks a valley towards Mount Rundle. The hotel opened in 1888 by the Canadian Pacific Railway and was intended to be one of Canada's earliest Grand Railway hotels. The five-story building was constructed to accommodate 280 guests, and as the hotel and demand grew, the original hotel became the North Wing. But this was destroyed by a fire in 1926. As the hotel stands today, it's made up of two main buildings, an 11-story tower in the main block of the hotel. Inside, the hotel features gorgeous oak beams, panelings, animal carvings, and stunning stained glass work, and now offers 757 guest rooms and suites throughout the property. It has event spaces and a terrace garden. Throughout its years, the hotel has seen countless guests and staff come and go, but some apparently stuck around. This hotel is frequently regarded as one of the most haunted in the world. One of the most famous spirits in the hotel, so much so that she's even featured on her own stamp and coin, is the Ghost Bride. Her story dates back to the late 1920s, and per reports, on a young couple's wedding day, the bride, decked out in her beautiful wedding gown, descended down one of the hotel's marble staircases. Some reports say that something startled her, causing her to slip and fall. Others say she caught her heel in the hem of her dress. And some say her dress actually brushed up against a candle's flame along the staircase. But whatever happened that day resulted in this bride dying on that staircase, never getting to walk down the aisle. Since then, hotel staff and guests have watched as a veiled figure moves up and down that stairwell, and others have seen a figure in a wedding dress dancing in the ballroom upstairs. Sadly, it appears that her spirit is pining for that first dance with her husband that she never had. Along with the Ghost Bride, while they'd rather not mention certain numbers, there are specific rooms at the hotel that staff say are haunted. And every haunted hotel needs the forbidden creepy room. Here, it's room 873, also known as the missing room. Story goes, decades ago, a family was murdered in room 873. And after a long investigation, the room was renovated and once again opened to be booked out by guests. But then, reports of paranormal activity began overwhelming the front desk. Guests told staff that they would be asleep in the room only to be woken up to the sounds of hollow screams. One guest said he woke up to see bloody handprints on the mirrors inside the room. But by the time he ran and got help, and staff got to the room to investigate, the prints disappeared. Eventually, it got so bad, in efforts to cover up the murders and ghostly activity, it was rumored that they decided the room would be sealed off forever. The door was removed, and the opening was completely covered with drywall, flush to match the rest of the hallway, so that no one would ever know. And more importantly, no guests would ever fall victims to the terrors of room 873 ever again. Now, supposedly, if you ask hotel employees about this room, they are forbidden to speak about it and give these really strange, rehearsed, scripted answers. But it's quite clear there was a room there and that it was covered up. As there's rooms ending in 73 on every other floor, the baseboard is cut where the doorway would have been. And supposedly when you knock along the walls, you'll notice they are made of a thick plaster. But as you knock down the hall on the 8th floor, it suddenly changes to a hollow sound right below the light, where the door to room 873 would have existed. And this hollow sound continues for the length of a standard doorway. At the hotel, there's one spirit in particular that staff and visitors alike share a certain fondness of, and that is Sam the Bellman, AKA the Good Ghost. I gotta say, this is one of my favorite ghost stories of all time. When discussing legendary haunted hotels, few spirits are as endearing and mysterious as Sam the Bellman, AKA Sam McCauley. Sam McCauley was a Scottish immigrant who worked as a bellman at the Banff Springs Hotel. He was a real person. In his days working there, he served as the hotel's lead bellhop throughout the mid-20th century, welcoming guests for years. He retired in 1975 and passed away just a few years later in 1978. But shortly after his death, guests and staff began reporting really mysterious ghostly encounters in the hotel and believe Sam's ghost is behind these supernatural events. And these reports have persisted for decades, making him a lasting part of the hotel's legacy. Long after he passed, Sam continues to make his presence known in the hotel. Those who come across Sam's spirit say that his presence is a good one. He is reportedly incredibly helpful and kind, with some guests saying that his ghost actually assisted them during their stay. Sam seemed to take his oath of being dedicated to customer service to the afterlife. What makes his story so compelling is some of the encounters with Sam's spirit from employees and guests alike. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, these stories are pretty chilling. One famous encounter involved two women who called up to the front desk for service after they got to their room and found that their key would not work. The ladies were told someone would be sent right up to help, but 5 minutes turned to 10, and the bellhop was taking a bit to get there. Then, suddenly, an older hotel employee seemingly appeared out of nowhere. He approached their door and proceeded to unlock it for the women. The women said thank you, and the nice older gentleman left. By the time the bellman got up to their room, he was surprised to find the women inside. He asked them how they got in, with their key not working, and they told him the older bellman in the plaid jacket helped them. This bellman was confused. No one was employed at that time that matched that description, and after discussing it, staff realized that this individual matched Sam's description to a T, and everyone agreed. This was his ghost, stepping in to help these guests from beyond the grave. Other stories involve guests seeing Sam's ghost haunting his old office, which is currently a guest room. Sam's spirit is also very commonly seen roaming the 6th and 7th floors of the hotel. Another really compelling aspect of Sam's ghost is he's always usually seen in his 1960s or 1970s bellman uniform, and he has appeared both transparent and corporal in different accounts. But his spirit is always doing helpful things for guests and staff, and is considered the good ghost. He reportedly has a really helpful disposition, often stepping in and assisting guests with locked doors and lights. But Sam only appears to some people and not others. And when interacting with guests, he often vanishes when directly acknowledged, or guests try to turn around and tip him for his assistance. Many believe that Sam is a guardian spirit and remains at the hotel to continue his duties and look out for guests. Others believe he's still there because of unfinished business. Some unresolved matters keep him attached to the hotel. Either way, the frequency of sightings and experiences involving Sam's spirit seem to be pretty consistent. He appears without any noticeable increase or decrease during specific seasons or certain dates. And encounters involving Sam the bellman are always positive. And thus, Sam has become an unforgettable character at the Banff Springs Hotel. I also find it so fascinating that Sam's ghost is supposedly able to open doors. That's incredible. I so want to visit this hotel, and I so want to see Sam the bellman. I gotta know, what are your thoughts on the Banff Springs Hotel? Have you ever visited? I would love to know. And also, let me know what haunted spots you'd like to see next on the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, this is Avery After Dark.